Hi, this is Jean Bruce Scott.
And Randy Reinholz.
And when we're not busily producing some of the most outstanding Native American theater in Los Angeles,
we always like to check out the best of British audio adventures with Alex Lefchuk and his team of the Midweek Drive.
And Midweek Drive morning editions on Siren FM.
And Southside Broadcasting. .podbean.com.
Science, technology, engineering, and mathematics are four wonderful subjects, all collectively known as STEM. And it seems as though the coronavirus generation, which is clearly a sobriquet that's being used to define the pandemic world that we're living in, may well be inspired to actually look at careers in those particular STEM areas. Doctors, inventors, engineers, all heading ahead of being a TV presenter in terms of children and where they're looking to go. Obviously inspired by NHS workers or indeed engineers during the COVID-19 crisis. However, there's still a little bit of a gender dysfunction in terms of where this is coming in terms of boys and girls and lines with respect to that. So who better to address this than somebody who's been responsible, amongst other things, for rotary drilling on Mars, to hybrid electric aviation, to expansive global supply chains of the aeronautical industry. It's only the amazingly talented 2019 Young Woman Engineer of the Year, Ying Wan Lo. How are you, Ying?
Hi, very good. Thanks for having me today.
Absolute delight. Now, talk to us about your own pathway first in terms of what was it that appealed to yourself in terms of entering the world of engineering and physics and so on.
Yeah, sure. I think growing up, I always liked to solve puzzles and play with Lego and things like that. And when it comes to choosing a degree, I want to do something that helps the society at a larger scale. And I thought the most tangible way to do that is by being an engineer. So I've gone on to a mechanical engineering degree.
A few years ago, I think we were quite depressed to find that most people actually wanted to be reality TV stars at a certain period of their life. I thought, oh dear, it's even worse than when they wanted to actually be train drivers or footballers or sports folk and various other folk. But it does seem as though the recent survey is seeing a shift in people's perceptions. 82% agreeing that science should play a greater role in the decisions made by the government. 64% looking at a career in medicine, and that inspirational factor is really good news that's coming out of the pandemic that we're all enduring.
Yes, absolutely. And all this comes from the new IET research that shows, like you say, young people are not even more interested in STEM because of this. And another thing that could be down to two reasons. Firstly, the media showcase real STEM role models that they can relate to doing great work. And secondly, it has highlighted the positive impact of what you can do as a STEM professionals. We've talked about doctors saving lives, engineers building ventilators, and now, very crucially, scientists are looking to develop a vaccine that can help us out from this pandemic. And all of this really help raise awareness of the importance of STEM in our society.
Why then is there that differential between girls and boys? Again, I would hope that by now we're in the third decade, really, of the 21st century, and we're still seeing a disparity in terms of fewer girls going into the STEM area.
Well, I think it's a problem that has long been stubborn, and past IET research has shown that this gap in perception between boys and girls into engineering could potentially be down to parents mirroring their children's views. They could be encouraging boys to look into careers in science and technology, but maybe not girls. So that could be one of the reasons. But I think positively, this pandemic has then actually inspired more girls to consider that, with 42% of girls saying that they will consider a career in science and engineering.
Elon Musk is, of course, well known for his belief and passion to actually get humanity on Mars. And that's what appealed to me about your work with rotary drilling on Mars. But let's look ahead to the future in terms of where do you see things going? I mean, is it a case of the space industry is something which will finally start actually getting traction and many more areas will be opening up, such as extraplanetary exploration and so on?
Yeah, when I did the research about 10 years ago, it was exciting new fields, and we were really pushing the boundaries of what is known out there. And the space industry, commercial space industry, has progressed since then with SpaceX sending astronauts up to the International Space Station. And I think in the future, well, Apart from space, STEM professionals will continue to develop technology that will transform every aspect of our lives, so not in space, but in, you know, in healthcare, in cities, in transportation, and many, many areas.
As we say, IET, an awful lot of positive work that's being done from that point of view. Would you like to just share with us how, from your own point of view, you're helping to support children's imaginations? I mean, I cite my own experience in terms of one of the reasons I was inspired to do a chemistry and biology degree was because I was passionately a follower of the Star Trek TV series back in its early day and so on. And the life sciences particularly appealed to me. Are there other areas that can really fire off people? Because although we're delighted that more folk are going into STEM as a result of the pandemic, it seems a little bit heavy-handed to actually be an inspirational factor to say, well, we'll just have a global pandemic. That'll get more scientists.
Well, I think apart from being a pandemic, there are many, many areas where STEM professionals can make a real impact. For example, help develop a sustainable future for the world. So in helping with climate change and things like that, there are plenty of things that we can do that can really, really shape the world.
And what are your own personal hopes for the future of engineering and technology? And I'm pleased you talked about the world there, because we do, despite what many of our politicians might be arguing about in various ways and so on, we do live in a global society. What are your own kind of hopes for the future?
Well, my big hopes for the future is to eliminate diseases in general, use technology to better connect with each other as, you know, citizens of the world, and you know, make lives better. That's what engineering has been doing since very, very early days.
Yes, I'm often tempted to actually cite the line that engineers love to change things as well. It can often cause a lot of challenge as well, but it's the improvement that we need to look for. That's the important thing. Where would you point people to find further information online and over the next few weeks about getting involved with the STEM subjects?
So if anyone's interested in finding out more, they can go on the IET's education website, or they can go on visitabetterworld.org for more information. There are plenty of case studies, STEM resource for both children, students and parents.
It's been absolutely wonderful sharing some thoughts with your good self today. I'm sure you should really be 2020 Young Woman Engineer of the Year as well as 2019. I mean, I think that should go without saying. You should actually sort of go for that and probably the hat trick next year. But absolute delight. Take care and happy further work in the fields of STEM.
Thank you very much.
Me. sky. We used to love the daylight. You lost your trust, and so you took it out on me.
Going to your favorite restaurant for a cozy dinner for two, think again. If COVID doesn't get you, the food and drink will. There's nothing more miserable than peeling back the layers of a dish to reveal its hidden naughtiness. Not my words, but the words actually featured in today's newspaper from the Opinion Matrix from the Daily Telegraph. Holding up to the microphone at present. And it's the fabulous William Sitwell who wrote them. And William, you're back with us on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition via Zoom.
Good morning. What an absolute joy to see you. And the idea when I write my columns that I will then hear them read back to me in your voice. I mean, this is just another dimension. It's just so.
Well, if COVID has brought one thing to us, it's clearly actually this notion that we don't have to be in a studio. We can use this. We can actually sort of liaise in all sorts of ways. And today, not only do we have your good self, we also have the fabulous Chloe Rose as well. Chloe's become quite a seasoned pro with these Zoomers over the last few months. That's when she wasn't actually having her appendicitis challenges right in the midst of COVID.
Wow.
But we keep going. It's nice to meet you anyway, William. It's lovely to meet you.
Lovely to meet you. Yeah. You've got a television sort of strapped to the ceiling, yeah?
I have, yeah. It's in my bedroom. I probably could have picked a better room, but I didn't really know where to go, you know.
Do you use binoculars in order to be able to see it?
Yeah, because it's a tiny TV, isn't it? Yeah, I certainly do. Well, I never actually use that TV. I never use it, to be honest.
Get rid of it. Hang some paint.
Get something a bit snazzy.
I never thought, William, when we started doing these things all those years ago, that we'd end up actually with your good self giving interior design recommendations to other participants on the show. It's just...
Can I show you this room that I'm in?
Yes.
And I'll drive it for your beloved listener.
There are an awful lot of books there. This is what Edith Sitwell would be proud of her lineage in this, and a beautiful view that's coming through from that point of view. And lots of cameo brooches that are coming through there. And now a full set. It's like we've had a panoramic 360-degree turnaround. It's fantastic.
This room is called the Book Room, and I'm talking to you from, it's an attic room at Weston Hall, my family home in Northamptonshire. And this was my grandfather, Sir Cheverel Sitwell's personal library, his resource. And downstairs, where I write in the study, he wrote over 130 books. And what? This room is surrounded by a lot of the research and resource material that he used for a lot of those books. So there's books about, you know, I can see opposite me, Kyoto, Renoir, decoration, Tuscan villas. He wrote about art and furniture, music, and it's rather wonderful to be here, and this is his personal library. So it's quite emotional for me, because actually we're having to sell this house that's been in my family since 1714. So it's a joy to do a Zoom to broadcast from this room, which is a very special room, and who knows what it'll be in the future. But anyway, it's fun to be up here. And do you like that? Behind me, there are these wonderful set of library steps. Ooh. I think it was Keith Richards, wasn't it, who fell off his library steps? They're lethal.
Yes, and certainly in the case of Keith Richards, that wasn't a case of a metaphor or indeed an allegory for his life in so many ways.
Exactly. It could be.
William, none of us expected this at the start of this year when we were sort of doing our usual sort of Thursday morning Zooms and so on and so forth. And clearly within the restaurant business, huge issues and impacts with respect to that. From your own perspective, has it been a case of, and certainly you've kept up the positive side of things from there, do we see light at the end of the tunnel? Is it a case of, for our generation, this is the equivalent to what Eggs or Anarchy was for the wartime generation, or is it a case of we're being too soft on that? It's just like Spanish flu and other issues.
It's worse than that, because there was always a prospect that war would end and that the economy would grow unencumbered. And the problem at the moment is that so many restaurants aren't opening, aren't reopening. Every single day we see news of other, you know, famous establishments, lesser known places that won't reopen. You know, it's, you know, the, you know, Phantom of the Opera has performed its last back in March. And this is an indication of the West End being empty. Think of all of those restaurants that whose survival depend on you know, theatre goers, tourism, people in the city. I mean, the trains are empty. That means that people aren't going into the cities to eat. I was listening to a radio station yesterday where someone was talking about the administrators in the NHS being told not to go back to work until next January at the earliest. Masks, I was hearing this morning, could be something we have to do forever. It's absolutely devastating for the hospitality business. If you are a small independent and you're in a rural location, you might have a better chance because people aren't going to the cities. If you are a big chain with lots of resources and investment and people prepared to back you for the long term, you might be okay. But I think that a lot of restaurants that are in buildings where the costs are high, from the rent to the insurance, the overhead of large numbers of staff, you know, they just simply won't exist without a healthy turnover. And a lot of restaurants teeter on the brink. And people in hospitality are brave, passionate souls who always dream of success. And even in good times, life can be very, very difficult. I mean, you know, Heston Blumenthal's Fat Duck was about to go out of business before it won its Michelin star. And that was at a time where restaurants were starting to boom. So the greatest names, the smallest names, no one is immune from this. And it's very, very worrying. I would just urge people, if you can, eat out, take advantage of Sunak's discount. But also, if you can, think about independent cafes and restaurants, do try and visit them, because it will devastate the landscape. It's hugely worrying. I mean, as you and I know, I had a history of restaurants that came out on a day where every single restaurant in the world was shut, which was great from publicity points of view. But again, people weren't going to bookshops, so sales haven't soared quite as much as we might have dreamt. So yeah, it's a very tough time, and there's no two ways about it. I would say that chefs and restaurateurs are some of the most creative people that we have in this country. If anyone's going to be versatile, adaptive, and is going to be creative in the way that they think, re-energize, rework their businesses, then chefs and restaurateurs will. But not everyone will have the good fortune and good luck to be able to keep going. So it's a sad state of affairs, to be honest. But we have to look at, you know, we have to be positive. We still have a fantastic, you know, burgeoning food culture in this country. We can shop for wonderful ingredients. But I would just say to people, try and support your independent little neighborhood restaurants, and don't take a packed lunch.
we were talking recently with the owner of I think it's called the Pitch restaurant, and indeed winner of 2018 MasterChef, I think it's Kenny Trutt, who was saying that he was making great strides with respect to obviously delivery and online aspects and that kind of aspect there. And I think, you know, hats off to that. What you cited there, though, of course, with respect to the capital, i.e. London, is something which was echoed by our film critic, Richard Fitzwilliams, that actually Brighton is busy. Other parts of the country are kind of looking quite lively. But while the challenges with particularly the whole theatre area of London is it's still very, very quiet. Now, that may be because there's not really an encouragement. I mean, clearly, we've still got congestion charges, lots of other aspects that are actually there. Or it may be, again, a shift and people are quite clearly afraid. I'll bring in Chloe at this particular moment, Dan, because Chloe, I know you've sung the praises of the Cleethorpes fish and chips for many years.
Yes.
And that is a classic in so many ways. Any questions you'd like to put to William about his, you know, very heartfelt feelings there vis-a-vis the restaurants trade and the hospitality industry?
Yeah, I mean, how do you think... I know, obviously, you're saying that it's majorly affecting restaurants because people aren't really willing to go out right now. But, you know, how is it... I'm more interested, like, how has it affected you in general, like well, as an individual?
As an individual, and you're kind to ask. I had a jittery few months. I mean... You know, when we're all in that balloon and we're having to argue for our worth in order to stay in the balloon, and you say, well, I'm a restaurant critic and the other one's a nurse, I think I know who was probably going to get chucked out first. So I certainly think that it was quite an unnerving time. Fortunately, The Telegraph, who I write for, have been wonderful. And the food has been a big story during lockdown. And I've written a huge number of pieces, including the piece yesterday, attacking the government of mooting the idea of labelling menus with the calorie intake, which is just such a backward, unhealthy attitude and approach to food. But that's a whole other story. So, yeah, I've had to be adaptive as well. I mean, one of the ways that I earn money is through supper clubs and events. And in the same way, you know, hospitality, that revenue stream just completely shut down. But I had to adapt. I launched a wine business 6 weeks ago, williamshousewine.com.
Lovely.
World's smallest wine store. And this was something that I thought, well, how else can I earn money? Well, I love my wine. I think that I have a, you know, people kind of, for whatever reason, listen to what I have to say occasionally on my judgments. And so I select the smallest degree of choice: 2 whites, 2 reds, 2 rosés, 2 fizzy wines. So there's only ever a pair of each of those available to buy. So it makes buying very simple. And I change the range every 3 or 4 weeks. It gets delivered safely to your door. It's very well priced and delicious. And so, you know, I think the key thing is you can't just sit there and mope. You've got to do things. So I set up a little business and then decided to move to Somerset. So you have to, it is hard because once you're just stuck with your thoughts and you're unable to buy a house, meet people, sell things, it makes all those imaginings purely that. We have to do things. We have to try and set things in train. So lockdown was hard, but it was probably good for those who needed to probably have a moment of pause and contemplation.
Yeah.
And people who sort of are slaves to their hobs, stove slaves. And I think it's been quite good for some of them to sit back and actually think about the world and the life around them.
Mm.
But yeah, you're kind to ask about me. I appreciate it.
So, oh, you're welcome. It's interesting.
I'm fine. We have a little boy, Walter, and one more on the way. And I've got two other elder teenagers. So, you know, this device I'm looking at has been a saviour, actually. I've never FaceTimed before lockdown. And I call my elder kids, so I don't see as much. We speak on FaceTime, and it makes a huge difference, actually. And these Zoom calls, I mean, it is... I was kind of quite old-fashioned and thought, oh, God, really? I've got to look at people. But, you know, you get used to it. And I think it's actually quite a good thing because... I mean, okay, I've got a shirt on. I've also got some shorts. It does mean, actually, that if people are having to appear on Zoom, you know, you've got to look after yourself. Otherwise, people go, God, what's happened to him? You know, all this sort of long food.
I love that.
So yeah, it's been good, you know, connecting people digitally. I mean, I seriously don't think that lockdown would have worked pre-mobile phones, because I think without people being able, you know, people, I'm sure a lot of people who've been locked down have been quite happily glued to their phones and using these devices to communicate. I think it would have been a very different scenario 20 years ago. I think we would have struggled, but who knows?
Well, certainly it was something which we felt if MPs could actually use it and if the BBC could use it, there's no reason why Siren Radio couldn't also embrace Zoom and continue with our own way and continue the programming. And William, it's been slightly longer than our normal pieces, but I think not much more pleasurable for that purposes. We've got a couple of final questions for you. Slight variations as ever. Have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the programme today?
I've loved it, and I'd love to know, is that a dead body you're covering with that dainty rug behind you?
It's actually a whole collection of videotapes, actually, William. So it's old school, but we have to just carry through it the best we can. That's the important thing. We could have also, the piece I did just a few moments ago, we have to say also, William, Happy International Friendship Day, because that is...
Yes, exactly. Happy International Friendship Day.
And as the caller there, he preferred to actually be anonymous, and you don't have to have the camera on, of course. There is that sort of option of taking the vision off or just going in sound alone. And as it's radio, at the end of the day, it's the theatre of the mind. So the next critical question is, can we look forward to featuring you again in the very near future?
Yes, please. And I hope very much to chat to Chloe, and I look forward to seeing her room decorated with paintings and not television sets.
Oh, I know, it needs changing. I've got a nice canvas there. I like those. Very... Is that a bit better? Is that a bit better, or is it still bad?
That's wonderful.
It's opening up a whole new world. Actually, before you go...
I can't beat the bookcase, but I'll try.
Nobody can beat that bookcase. That is that's some serious literature. Eminently so. Actually, William, shameless plug for your latest book, which is out there. We want to talk about that more perhaps next time, maybe even next week. Just plug it in terms of people could actually read it, and then they could actually have it to hand when we talk about it next time.
Well, if you buy a copy of The Restaurant, A History of Eating Out by me, William Sitwell, it's a wonderful way to then enjoy your tipple that you've purchased from williamshousewines.com.
Exactly. I think Chloe's very interested in that, so we'll definitely have to progress on that basis. Linking
I want to try the wine.
Cleethorpes, Somerset, Teesside and Lincoln, William Sitwell, we salute you and we'll speak again very soon.
Thanks, guys.
Bye, it's nice to meet you.
Broken. and thoughts that fill my head. But I saw you in my sleep, and I left you in my dreams. Oh, crashing.
Lost will be found.